Shotgun snap. Here's a three-man rush. He winds up and he throws a line drive down the middle. It's caught in stride. 25 to the 20. Down to the 15. Coming to the near side. Cooper to the 5 to the pylon. Touchdown, Dallas. What a throw! But what a run! After the catch by Amari Cooper. 45-yard touchdown. Dallas scores to extend their lead midway through the fourth quarter.
Cowboys eventually pull away from the Giants last night, Monday Night Football, 37-18. But the story that seemed to be going all over social media last night had nothing to do with the players. It had to do with a feline.
Is that a cat or is that like a, I don't know.
You're right, it is a cat.
Now he's at the 5. He's walking to the 3. He's at the 2. And the cat is in the CDW red zone. CDW, people who get it now, a policeman, a state trooper has come on the field. And the cat runs into the end zone. That is a touchdown. And the cat is elusive, kind of like Barkley and Elliott.
So the cat, somehow, like, how does a cat just show up and... In an NFL stadium like that. I don't know how that happens. I guess the cat was hanging out in the locker room, maybe, in the tunnel, and it snuck onto the field. Whatever the case may be, Kevin Harlan, the best in the business there, and having fun with it like he did with the streaker a few years ago, if you remember that cut. That was hilarious. Welcome to the Sports Ticket. Wade Gershon with you. Dusty Dine also join us here in just a little bit. We'll update you on local sports information first, and we can tell you that the latest information in regards to, if you missed any of this, the state cross-country results. So we went through all the area placers yesterday on the show, but if you missed that, it's at ncksports.com. The All-State Volleyball Turning Teams posted at ncksports.com. The NCAA All-League Volleyball Team posted at, you get it, ncksports.com. And all of that is for you there at ncksports.com. Speaking of that, that's where you can watch the live video stream of the Beloit Trojans' second round of the football playoffs coming up on Friday. They'll be at number 4, Colby, who's 9-0, Beloit 6-3, but Colby only beat Beloit by 1 point back in week 4 in late September. 6:30 pregame kickoff at 7. You can watch it live video stream at ncksports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. Beloit at Colby, also on the radio at KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. That should be a great ball game. And also, St. John's Tipton will have a matchup against Axtell, a team they saw earlier in the year. So a lot of rematches when it comes to the football playoffs, as we talked about. Axtell, St. John's Tipton, that'll be on Z96.3 The Lake on Friday. Dusty will have the call with that one. Pregame at 6:30 from Beloit. And Sylvan Lucas at Osborne is a rematch of a game played earlier this year that was all Osborne. But you never know in a rematch. Sylvan Lucas Osborne at 6 o'clock. That's an earlier kick on Friday. And Thunder Ridge, their only loss, of course, to Osborne. And they very well could meet each other again in the sub-state finals, or the semifinals, as I like to call it. Thunder Ridge at Wheatland-Grinnell, that's at 6 o'clock coming up on Friday in Grainfield. And then Republic County is at Smith Center. Yes, Republic County is in the second round of the playoffs as they blew out Ellis. Republic County, a couple of wins. They're red hot. Concordia is at Scott City. Scott City whipped Concordia just a few weeks ago. And Southeast Saline's at Riley County. Southeast, if I remember correctly, got by Riley County earlier this year. And last year, that's what happened. And then Riley County got the payback in the playoffs. So all those matchups, let's see, they are all rematches except for the Thunder Ridge-Wheatland-Grinnell game. They're all rematches. So many people will jump on the wagon and go with the team that won. I think of all those matchups, the team that has the best chance to win a rematch, there are two. I would say Riley against Southeast and Beloit at Colby. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, sure.
I would think so, especially when Beloit-Colby was a one-point game, obviously. So locker room chats, we'll have our final week of football locker room chats.
Yes, tomorrow night we'll talk to the head coaches of Beloit, Osmond, Smith Center, and Thunder Ridge.
Around 5:15, and then there on Thursday night we'll talk with the coaches of St. John's Tipton, Lakeside Rock Hills, and Sylvan Lucas, all that around 5:15. And then you can always go back and listen to them if you missed them on our locker room chat podcast at katycountry94.com.
I look forward to that. I don't know if I'm ready for basketball. Like, I'm not. The last few years, I've kind of been in between. And I'm like, well, you know, I'll deal with it. But this year, it seems like it's even earlier than it's ever been.
It is, too.
And I'm not ready for it.
Yeah.
Let's get through football. I think basketball, I agree with Riley, and we'll have him on coming in about 15, 20 minutes, talk K-State. I'm with him, and I've talked with other people as well. It makes it very tough for media to cover all this stuff. And I'm not saying, oh, woe is me, the media. But when you're in football mode, and then you got to go back and forth basketball, it's one thing if it just overlaps a little bit. But now we're getting to the point, like, I mean, for crying out loud, K-State has got, they've played 8 games. There's still a third of their schedule left. And we're talking about K-State opening up their season tonight. Same thing with KU football. And we're talking about KU men's basketball. And You know, I think it's great that KU and Duke play each other, and that Kentucky, Michigan State are playing each other in the Champions Classic at Madison Square Garden tonight, the top four teams in the country. Pretty awesome. At the same time, it's too early. It's too early to have this game, especially when it's a season opener. If you want to give this game to me November 20th, I'm all for it. But this is just a little bit too early. I don't know what you can really fully take out of this game tonight between KU and Duke. You can hear it tonight on Z96.3 The Lake. They should be two great games, but considering that these teams have only had exhibition games, like in the past, when you have the Champions Classic, usually you have a game or two under your belt before you play this. That's not the case this year. Bill Self talks about Duke, and they're always good.
I've seen Duke the same way they've seen us, and the score was very impressive, and they turned over the team they played, not only by making them throw it out of bounds, but they stole the ball. I think they had double-figure steals the first half, which is hard to do. So, you know, they're really aggressive and active, and certainly they're going to be terrific. And you know, I just hope they're not terrific at our expense. You know, we all saw what they did last year in the Champions. Of course, it's a totally different team then, but they still have the same point guy running everything. And they're going to be a team that has a chance to win a national championship.
Well, and KU should as well, and these are blue bloods. I mean, you got Kentucky and Kansas and Duke and Michigan State, the number one team in the preseason polls, and Michigan State, Kentucky play after KU and Duke tonight. And last time KU and Duke played at Madison Square Garden, Kansas beat them on a last-second shot by Frank Mason. Last time KU and Duke played was the Elite Eight in Omaha a couple years ago in Beloit. Or excuse me, Beloit. Dude, it's been a long week.
I do that sometimes. You're good.
I cover Beloit all weekend long. Beloit beat Duke, and then Kansas beat St. John's, and then Lakeside knocked off St. John's. So, like, I don't know, man. It's all running together. I'm on drugs, man. I'm just going to say it. Legal drugs from prescription, trying to get this cold taken care of, which we're getting there. So, anyway, KU plays Duke. Beloit does not play Duke. Ryan Eilert, very pleased that they're not playing Duke. But, anyway, Duke and Kansas, last time they played was the Elite Eight in Omaha. Kansas won in a thriller in overtime. Bill Self versus Coach K, the series is tied 3-3. So tonight, one will have bragging rights. Not that either coach is too worried about that. And Duke, you know, you really got a feel for Duke. No Zion Williamson, no R.J. Barrett. How in the world are they going to make it through this year?
Yeah, well, Zion's not here, and R.J. So, no, it's a different approach every year. This group is going to be a unit, not a starting five. And it's got to be, everyone's got to be ready to play. And it's more like I call it old school. You know, like our older Duke teams from years beyond. Not the Leighton or Hurley or Battier, you know, those guys, but a team that needs to play really good defense. Our kids want to do that, so hopefully we can keep that going.
It's an interesting game tonight. I don't know what to expect. You know, Dotson had an ankle injury. Isaiah Moss, they need him as a three-point shooter. That doesn't sound like, I don't know if he's going to go tonight. I haven't heard anything. I don't think he probably will. To me, it's a couple things stand out in this game. One, if KU plays two bigs, can they defend the four? Matthew Hurt is a talented freshman who chose Duke over Kansas in the recruiting battle. So will DeSosa or McCormick be able to guard on the wing? And I have my questions about that. I don't think McCormick can. DeSosa, I think, is quicker and maybe can. Then you got question about the three-point shooting for Kansas. You know, Dotson's their best three-point shooter. Garrett, we know, is not very good, although in the exhibition, he shot it well, but I'll believe it when I see it over the course of a season. And then you got a whole bunch of freshmen, you know, Christian Brown, Jalen Wilson, Tristan Inaruna. Those guys are talented, but I don't know how good outside shooters they are, especially against teams that are like Duke, that are going to challenge every shot. You're going to see man-to-man. You're going to see some zone. I would guess Duke's going to mix it up. So to me, there's two keys tonight. How does Kansas and Bill Self approach their lineup against Duke? Are they going to play four guards 20 minutes of this game? Are they going to play two bigs most of the game? Can Duke defend the two bigs? Can Kansas defend with two bigs on the floor? I think that's the fascinating matchup tonight and pretty much almost every game this year for Kansas. Is Bill Self going to have to go small or is he going to have to go big? And if he can go big, he'd prefer that. That would be great. But I don't think he's going to be able to go big as much as he liked this year because that's just the way college basketball is. You basically have one big and five wings. That's just the way the game is going.
Yeah.
But perhaps Kansas can be the exception to the rule. And then three-point shooting. You know, three-point shooting was a problem last year for KU by far. And is it better if you don't have Isaiah Moss tonight? I don't know. Dotson's not a great three-point shooter. He's decent. Abaji has shot the ball well in exhibition, but that's against Fort Hays State and Pitt State. Duke's a little bit different. But Abaji certainly has all the talent in the world. You know, Azubuike, can you get him the ball inside, take advantage of his size? I would guess they can. Then the question is, you know, can he stay out of foul trouble and stay healthy? It's probably the biggest question for Azubuike this year and any year for Kansas. And then the poise under pressure. You got two really good point guards. You got sophomore Devin Dotson against sophomore Trey Jones. And that's a great point guard matchup. And so I'm looking forward to that. So it's going to be fun. And if you're a KU fan, don't freak out if you lose tonight, which I'm not saying that KU will. I have no idea who to pick in this game because I have nothing to go off of other than exhibition games that I don't think you put any weight on. So I just think Kansas is going to have some issues playing two bigs on the floor. And if Bill Self goes four guards, I think Kansas is going to probably be better off tonight. Could be wrong. Could very well be wrong. Duke's got some new faces and new places. We mentioned all the talent they lost. I don't think Duke's going to win by 30 or 40 points like they did against Kentucky last year. Of course, Kansas, so many years ago, got beat by about 30 by Kentucky in this game. I think it'll be a good game. I think it'll be sloppy. I think there are going to be some mistakes. That's why I don't like this game being the first game of the season. Mm-hmm. I think the same thing will happen with Kentucky, Michigan State. And just remember, Kentucky got blown out of the water by Duke, and then Kentucky was really good at the end of last year. So you can't really put a lot of weight in it. To me, it's a barometer game to see where you stand early. But as Bill Self said, he goes, it'd be nice to have a few games under our belt. He goes, it's not ideal to have this game to start the year. He says, for the fans, excitement, it's great. But for a coach?
No.
Because we don't have a game or two to have under our belt to really prepare for this type of game. I mean, they have exhibition games, but that's not the same thing. So I don't know what to expect. I'm not even going to make a pick on this game, really. I'm leaning towards Duke winning, but the last two times KU's played Duke, I've had Duke winning and KU's won. So maybe I should stick with that formula and pick Duke to win. The Elite Eight game, I remember waking up that morning on the radio, I'd picked Duke to win, but that morning I woke up and I told my family, I said, I don't know what it is, but I have this gut feeling Kansas is going to win today. It just hit me when I woke up that morning. Mm-hmm. And I told them that before the game started. And then, of course, Grayson Allen's shot, which was halfway down and out, Duke would have won at the end of regulation. And you think about that. KU and Duke, the last two times, have come down to the very final seconds.
Yeah.
And one game went to overtime, and KU got the benefit of a fortunate roll that didn't go in for Duke in the Elite Eight. And then, of course, Malik Newman was awesome in the Elite Eight in Omaha. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you remember the last-second shot by Mason at Madison Square Garden. So you would say that if you believe in things evening out, which we know that's not true. We established that yesterday with state championship games for Beloit, that Duke would win this game tonight. So I think it'll be fun, but I'm not going to get too wired up. Are fired up about KU losing. If KU loses tonight by 1 or 50, KU fans will freak out of those by 50, but there's no need to worry about it. To me, this is a glorified exhibition game. It sounds weird to say that. It's a game that counts, sure, but the loss helps your resume, actually. And if you win it, it helps your resume.
Either way, you're not hurt no matter what happens tonight.
This game. You lose by 30.
Same with Kentucky and Michigan State, you know.
It's no big deal.
That's why they're playing it.
It's to me, it's just a fun showcase of the four best teams in the country in New York and who wins. Yeah, listen, will I really be pulling for KU to beat Duke? Sure, because I can't stand Duke. So, yeah, I'm going to be pulling for KU to win. But if they lose, I'm not going to lose any sleep tonight about it.
Yeah.
Right.
It's the game literally doesn't matter.
It really doesn't.
At the end of the season.
No.
It will now just because you want to see where you're at. Like you said, it's a barometer game to see where these for both teams, for all the teams, for every team playing tonight, it's a barometer game. But
sure. But
you know, these two games in New York are just a good example of where are we at this point of the season? How much have we grown in the practices that we've had from, into August, whenever they start till now, and see where they're actually at? Because it doesn't mean anything for anybody at the end of the year.
What's great about college basketball, you get to have these games, and it doesn't cost you a seed or a playoff berth like it does in football. That's why a lot of these teams are afraid to schedule a big-time game early in the year. Some teams aren't afraid to, but some are.
Yeah. Alabama, Oklahoma, they're not playing in the regular season in football.
No, but they will at some point. And if I remember right, they've got – so you look at Oklahoma, they played Ohio State. Oklahoma's been afraid of anybody.
Yeah.
And Alabama has played a decent team usually in the year. It's, in Dallas or a neutral field.
Yeah.
So, Alabama, to me, they aren't ducking anybody. But, there are certain schools that are like, you know what, we really don't want to have a loss early in the year because we're going to a really tough conference. We might get a conference loss. We have two. We're out of the playoff.
Yeah, right? It's just not a thing that happens on a normal basis
no,
in college football.
Whereas basketball, you
have it happens every year in
basketball, which is awesome. Okay, so KU, Duke tonight, pregame 5:30. You can hear the Jayhawks on your home for the Jayhawks, North Central Kansas, Z96.3 Lake. Later tonight. K-State is in action. It's North Dakota State. North Dakota State is supposed to be pretty good. They're the Summit favorite. And that'll be interesting early season test for Kansas State at home at Bramlage tonight. 7:02, which is interesting. 7:02. 7:02 is tip-off time. Hold him to that, will you? All right, Bruce Weber talks about the defense of his team.
The teams in the top of the league have defensive stoppers and guys on the all-defensive team. And so, you know, I really feel good about Xavier. He should have been there last year. I don't think people understood how good he was, and it's probably my fault for promoting Barry as much as I did and not. But I wanted to make sure Barry won that defensive player of the year. And then, you know, who are the next guys going to be? Mac is really good defensively as a big guy. It's just, you know, you don't see it all the time because it's in ball screens and he does all the things you need to do. But Mike could definitely be he takes pride in it, and he can, you know, he can do some of those things.
Is it true? I read that Chris Kleiman's going to wear a sweater, half of it North Dakota State, the other is K-State purple. Is that true? Oh, okay, I'm making that up.
That might not go over too well.
Probably not.
Gene Taylor might not want to do that either.
Probably not. I think he'll still keep him hired, though. That will be interesting and weird for Coach Kleiman if he intends the game, you know, even watching on TV. K-State, I don't know what to expect from K-State. They're young in some positions. Jada has a lot of talent. Snead, I think, is going to have a really good year. He has to, or K-State's going to have some problems this year. I still wonder what they got inside. Mayween is up and down at times, although he's been a good big man, undersized big man. Stockard, I don't think, is going to bring much. They like the young guys. They like Gordon. They like some of the young guys. They do. But I think it's going to be one of those roller coaster up and down type of non-cons for K-State.
Yeah, and that could mean they win a lot of those games, but there's tight games and games where you just like, I don't know about this team. And then there's going to be one game where, you know, Dejuan Gordon and everybody are going to be hitting from outside and they're going to win by 30. And kind of like the preseason, the exhibition games, you know, they blew out Emporia State and struggled against Washburn. I know that's two different teams and styles and different levels of talent, but that's going to be, I think, a lot of what we see here early on. And then once they find themselves, I really feel they'll be better than ninth in the Big 12.
Yep, I agree with you on that. Wichita State opens their season tonight against Omaha. That's in Wichita at Coke Arena, and that's at 7 o'clock tonight. Shockers struggled last year but then came on late, and there's a lot of expectations for Wichita State to really improve this year. Greg Marshall talks about the opening opponent for the Shockers.
You know, we've got a couple of pretty good teams coming in here in Omaha and Texas Southern. Neither one of those guys will roll over. They can beat high major teams. Omaha, I mean, they've got the Pyle kid from here in Wichita who I really like, and they're very well coached also. So it's going to be an interesting week. Got to play well. We've got to play well to win.
Well, you know, you do. That applies usually most of the time, although if you're playing a team that's not nearly as good. But, you know, Wichita State, I think, is a team that will be improved, and they're going to be fun to watch. And they really made some strides last year. Wichita State against Omaha tonight. All right, changing gears to football. It's being reported from a TV station down in Tallahassee that Bob Stoops could become the next head coach of Florida State football in the near future, according to their sources. They've heard the announcement could come as early as the end of this week or early next week, and that deal is really close to being done. Stoops coached Oklahoma from 1999 to 2016, won a national championship in 2000 over Florida State. Stoops won 10 Big 12 championship titles in his time at Norman, six-time Big 12 Coach of the Year. He retired from coaching in June of 2017, but has since returned to coaching. As in February of 2019, it was announced Stoops would be the head coach and general manager of the Dallas Renegades in the XFL. Along with Stoops taking over as head coach, sources said that Kendall Briles would remain on the staff as offensive coordinator. Jim Levitt would be retained as a defensive coordinator. And the source went on to say that while with keeping Briles on staff as offensive coordinator, it could turn into a head coach in waiting role. Stoops is 59 and wants to groom a successor before he retires. A couple things here. First of all, I'll believe it when I see it. I don't know if I buy all that. I don't know if I buy that at all. I think Bob Stoops is not coming back to college coaching, but I could be wrong. Very well could be wrong. And if he does go to Florida State, that's a home run hire for Florida State. And now you understand why they fired Willie Taggart.
Sure.
Listen, you know you can get Bob Stoops. Yeah, I'd probably have cut ties with Willie Taggart too. Unfortunate for Willie Taggart because he only had 21 games, but I don't feel sorry for him because he can count his money while he's unemployed. Because he gets all his money, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
But he did a very good job at Florida State, but he needed maybe more time. But would you have a Bob Stoops or if you had an Urban Meyer that you know you can get? I can understand you cut bait with a guy quickly to go get that guy. It's just unfortunate circumstances of timing for Willie Taggart. But I'm not sold that Stoops is a new head coach of Florida State. It's not official yet. There are other people that are with me. They're a little bit skeptical of it. But if, in fact, that is the case, it's a home run hire and it's a big get for Florida State. The second part of the story is worried about a coach in waiting. Stoops is 59. So you've retired and now you're coming back and you're worried about a coach in waiting? We shouldn't be re-energized, ready to go, and not worry about a coach in waiting. I mean, it's one thing if he's 69, but he's 59. We see coaches coaching their 70s and 80s, like Bill Snyder and Bobby Bowden, for crying out loud, and Joe Paterno. So that's kind of interesting to me as well. So we will continue to follow that story. Do you think Stoops is going to coach college football again?
I just...
It is interesting he's coming back to XFL.
I don't think this one.
You don't think Florida State?
I think maybe later. He might, but I don't buy this Florida State thing for some reason.
I remember he was in coordinator with Florida.
Yeah.
So, you know, Florida would come up, but he's been offered Florida before, talked to about Florida before, and he's turned them down. So why would Florida State be so appealing?
I don't know. I just don't buy it. Right
I'm not
now.
Either. Yeah. I'm not buying it completely, but we shall see. All right. I know you probably talked about this Friday. Mike Matheny, the new Royals manager, and I haven't had a chance to weigh in on this because we've had a lot of things going on. Mike Matheny is a new manager. It's not a sexy hire for Royals fans. I think Royals fans have been following too much of what Cardinal fans say. And let's just all agree, Cardinal fans aren't the brightest birds in the bunch. I'm kidding. It's a joke. Settle down, Cardinal fans. Just a little jab, Royals versus Cardinal type of thing. But Dayton Moore talked about the hiring of Mike Matheny as the new manager taking over Ned Yost.
We went into this with a completely open mind, and we wanted to get to know Mike and Mike get to know us, because we've always felt that the major league manager of the Kansas City Royals, absolutely, we want them to love us as much as we love them. We know how special this community is. We know what an unbelievable opportunity is for players to be able to join professional baseball and to aspire to be a Kansas City Royal, a championship caliber player. And so as Mike interacted with all of our people, to a man, everybody was amazed by his leadership, admired him as a human being. And so today, this process to where we are right now is a very, very humbling and exciting to be able to get to work with Mike and to be able to introduce him to our unbelievable community and to celebrate him as the next manager of the Kansas City Royals.
All right, so Matheny is the new manager of the Royals, and Matheny really, honestly, had a great press conference. But I remember Ron Prince had a great press conference, too.
There were a few things that really stood out to me and felt that I needed to research a little further. Unfortunately, in the advisory role, I was able to see behind the scenes what was going on, and it became obvious that the character and the culture that was here is different and unique. And that stood out to me. A culture of people, a culture of care. Because I truly believe that how you treat people matters. And to me, I could see that happening in every corner, regardless of position, regardless of status. There was a level of people caring about people, people caring about this community, people caring about this brand, what it stands for, and what it means to this community. And I just wanted to dive in and see more.
All right. Listen, I don't think Royals fans are super excited about the hire. I'm not super excited about the hire, but I will point out some reasons to be optimistic about the hire. All I got to do is look at the last Royals manager. Ned Yost was fired with 12 games to go in a season where his team was about ready to make the playoffs. He came on as a special advisor of player development, and then eventually the Royals hired him as their manager. Ned was having a winning year with the Brewers. He turned around the Brewers organization with the development of players. He played some of the young guys. He kind of got run out of town.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what happened? Ned became the winningest manager in Royals history, went to 2 World Series, and won one. I'd say it worked out. And Ned said, when he retired at his press conference, he goes, "I learned a lot from that experience." Mike Matheny is in a very similar situation, except he's younger than Ned Yost. Mike Matheny got the job with the Cardinals, and this is something that people overlook. He spent 6 seasons as the Cardinals skipper. He had a winning percentage of .555, which is good. He made the playoffs 4 times, and they made it to the World Series in 2013. That's not a bad resume for a manager. And yet Royals fans seem to be really upset that he's the new manager of the Royals. But it's very similar to Ned Yost. He got hired as a special advisor of player development. He had a chance to go around, travel the minors, look at all these prospects and young guys coming up in the system, just like Ned was able to do, and now has a better grasp as to you know, the progress and how they want to bring these guys up. And, of course, you want to catch this lightning in the bottle. You're going to have a window, just like you did when you won the World Series in 2015 and made it in 14. You have a window of opportunity. Mike Matheny, I think, has learned from some mistakes he made in St. Louis. It was believed there was some hazing towards younger players. There is all that Mike Matheny allowed. There was a talk that he was stubborn in making changes in his lineup. I think every manager is accused of being stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
I have questions as to how he handles his pitching staff. But I will say this, if he's learned from his mistakes in St. Louis, and by the way, he made mistakes in St. Louis and he made the playoffs four times in 6 years. If he takes the Royals to the playoffs for the next 6 years, I'm going to say it's a good hire. I'm going to go with that. So I'm going to give Mike Matheny the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to give him an opportunity as a Royals fan. Am I super excited about it? No. But I'm not totally upset that they did hire him.
No.
And Dayton Moore seems to know talent when it comes to managing. And he got Ned Yost and that worked out. So I trust Dayton Moore to do it right. And if Dayton Moore says he's the guy, then so be it. He's the guy. We'll give him a chance. I would have loved to have seen Carlos Beltran or Raul Ibanez, but I have no idea if those two were even considered or if they even were interested in the job. So I'm not going to go up there and act like some guy on a, you know, on 610 Sports in Kansas City and go screaming and yelling about how Dayton Moore didn't hire a guy when the guy was not even interested in the job. But obviously Matheny was. John Sherman, the owner, signed on the whole thing. He's the new owner of the Royals. So let's just go ahead and see how it plays out. It'll be a new energy. It'll be a different voice in the clubhouse, and this is a younger team. So I say let it play out, and let's not judge Mike Matheny right off the bat. It's one thing if he was horrible in St. Louis. Let me repeat, he made the playoffs four times in 6 years and made it to the World Series once. I'm sorry. An idiot can't do that. And Mike Matheny's not an idiot.
No.
And I think he's learned from some of his mistakes. He's not perfect. Neither am I or Dusty or anybody listening to the show. So I'm going to let it play out as a Royals fan and see what Mike Matheny can do. And am I expecting the Royals to make the playoffs next year? No. He's got time to figure it all out. Just like Ned. It took a little bit of some time, right? Royals had to go through some pains when Ned took over as manager because you had to play the young guys. I don't care. Escobar's struggling. Someday we're going to need him. Boy, was he ever right. We'll see if Matheny is that good with his predictions as well.